American Civil War, women sometimes purchased tear bottles when their husbands went off to fight, and they caught their tears in these bottles. And in this instance, they had a little stopper to seal the bottle and then open it up again the next day to shed more tears into it. And the more little bottles that you fill,
you'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Just a little bottle. Now, if there's anybody here who knows what lacrimatories are, it would be Scott Sanders. Do you know? All right, it's just a little bottle. They were found in great number in tombs, the final resting places of prosperous people in ancient Egypt, Greece, Rome, and the Middle East. There is an argument about them. They are called lacrimatories because most archaeologists originally thought that these things held tears when they were put into the tombs. Based on a few historical references that exist, the thought was that mourners captured their tears in these little bottles, and then they put them in the tombs as a sign of grief before those things were sealed. But the lacrimatories themselves were not sealed. Whatever was in them was left to evaporate. Now, a lot of archaeologists believe that the little bottles probably held fragrant unguents used to perfume the body and afterwards left open to perfume the tomb itself. Since whatever was in them has long ago evaporated, the argument is hard to settle. It rages on among professional archaeologists, and now you will probably lose sleep over it tonight. Tears or unguents? Tears or unguents? Some archaeologists believe that they held tears and unguents together. You figure it out for yourself. Whichever side, if either, is ever proven right, the practice of lacrimatories as tear bottles has been periodically revived. In Victorian England, women bought little tear bottles, very fancy decorative little things. When a loved one died, they caught some of their daily tears in the bottle. And again, they did not seal it. They would place it on the mantle or on a dresser or some such place. And each day as they cried, they would capture some more of the tears in the bottle and set it back. And when they stopped crying, so that the tears were not replenished, and the tears evaporated away on the day that there was nothing left in the bottle, it was considered that the period of mourning had ended. And so the lacrimatory served as a gauge of sorts. During our own American Civil War, women sometimes purchased tear bottles when their husbands went off to fight, and they caught their tears in these bottles. And in this instance, they had a little stopper to seal the bottle and then open it up again the next day to shed more tears into it. And the more little bottles that you filled against the day of your husband's return or burial, whichever way it worked out, the more little bottles that you filled with tears, supposedly, demonstrably, the greater your grief or missing. There were predictably cheaters, women who just filled a lot of bottles with water and scattered them about the house so that it looked like they were grieving. I checked. You can buy lacrimatories today. And you can buy the old ones. You can buy Civil War, Victorian England, and even ancient Egyptian, Roman, Greek, or Middle Eastern specimens. Caveat emptor in the antiquities market. There's a lot of fakes and knockoffs. So be careful if you shop for those things. But you can also buy brand spanking new ones manufactured in China out of beautiful colored glass with colorful metal gilding and peaked gasketed stoppers. You can buy them brand new for your own use. They are on Amazon starting at $34.99. Don't rush out. One, because I'm not done. Two, because I'm pretty sure the supply will last and there are still 103 shopping days until Christmas. Now, the Psalms. Having finished with Luke for a while, I return, as I do occasionally, to my intent eventually to have preached all 150 Psalms. Today, Psalm 56. And if you read the heading, it said, according to Jonath Elim Rehokim, which is to say, to the tune of the dove on distant trees. That sounds like a sad tune, doesn't it? The dove on distant trees. It was apparently a well-known tune that David thought fitted his poem. We also find the psalm classified as a miktam. The literal meaning of that word in the heading is hidden treasure. And David applies that term to this and five other of the psalms, all of which describe times when he was hurting, reeling in the face of trials and difficulties and grief. But in the midst of his pain and confusion, he found his footing in God. And I take that to be the hidden treasure. The griefs and truths in question are no secret. People hated David. They spied on David. They plotted against David. They wanted to kill David. David says they did all this proudly, as though it were some kind of noble undertaking to persecute David, like it would be a great favor to everyone in the world if we could just get rid of David and wipe out every last trace of his influence. Think Fox News and Donald Trump. Two people got it. Okay, great. They kept it up all day long, these foes of David, opposing him, oppressing him. Twice David said he felt like he had been trampled upon. Now, just to see, has anybody ever had that feeling like people have just been walking all over you, like there are muddy footprints up and down your back, and that last person probably wore golf shoes? David says he felt trampled upon. 56th Psalm is written in association with the time that David was seized by the Philistines in Gath. And David crossed over the border to the Philistines twice. You will find those accounts in 1 Samuel chapters 21 and 27. Both times, David left because he was convinced that Saul was going to succeed in getting him killed if he stayed in Israel. And so he scooted off across the border to the land of his ancestral enemies, the Philistines. The first time, he became pretty quickly convinced that the Philistine king Achish was going to kill him if he didn't get out of that country too. And brought before Achish, he feigned insanity because it was considered unlucky to kill a crazy person. And Achish did not kill him. And he took the opportunity to beat it back home to Israel and hide out in caves from Saul. There's about as much argument. The second time David went across the border, he actually was received into Achish's service and served as a commander of Philistine troops until the death of Saul, at which time he came back again to Israel. There's about as much agreement between scholars as to which time Psalm 56 refers as there is among archaeologists concerning the original contents of the lacrimatories. In either case, the time spent among the Philistines represented for David a retreat from the persecution of Saul at a moment when he was absolutely positive he would be killed if he did not get out of town, out of the nation. Picture the plight of some of the Syrian refugees today. Imagine a persecution so intense that you are willing to leave all your stuff behind and seek out refuge in a new land, even a hostile land. It has to get pretty bad before you would make a decision like that. At such a time, David felt himself pulled between two halves of his mind. On the one hand, there was the promise of God. You are going to sit on the throne of Israel and be king of my chosen people. On the other hand, there was the threats made by Saul, and it seemed like they were imminent, that just any minute was going to come that time when he would writhe briefly in agony on the ground, pinned there by the spear of a grinning, malevolent Saul, and then become food for the worms. King of Israel, as promised by God. Food for the worms, as promised by Saul. How many of us believe that we have received promises from God? Well, we certainly have. We become more familiar than we might like with the threats of Saul, under whatever name those threats may be currently issued. And we like to think that we trust God more than we fear Saul. But when the spear point is this close to your skin, it gets a little hard, because the threats of Saul can seem pretty convincing. And if that seems metaphorical to you, let me just tell you that it is not at all metaphorical to many of the Christians in the world today. The point of Saul's spear is right against their chest in the Middle East, and in places in the Far East as well. And when people are in that predicament, they feel exactly what David felt. They're scared. And they ask God, they entreat God to be gracious to them, and they mean it sincerely, and we understand. And we love it when we hear David's claim from verse 4, and again later in the psalm repeated, "I have put my trust in God, I will not be afraid. What can mere men do to me?" Well, that's the question, isn't it? What can they do to me? In David's case, there was the promise that he would sit on the throne of Israel, which is a pretty concrete promise and strongly implies that he would survive Saul's persecutions. God's promises to us may seem a little bit more otherworldly, which is okay with me, except that when the tip of the spear touches my skin, I will still be afraid. What can mere men do to me? Well, for starters, they can take away all my stuff and turn me out into the street and strongly suggest that I go find another street somewhere to stay in. They can separate me from my family. They can put me under legal sentence. Mere men had already done all of this to David, and they are doing it to the people of God today as we speak. They impose extra taxes on the people of God. They sell the children of the people of God as slaves. They run the people of God clean out of the country. And at the end of the day, they may make the people of God kneel in the sand on the shore of the Mediterranean and lop their heads off. Mere men can do all these things and do them. And God may deliver or not, a fact well attested to by the faithful as far back as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who said God may save us from the furnace or he may not. In either case, we will not bow down to your idol. And read that list of the heroes of faith in Hebrews chapter 11, and notice how many of them are heroes because their faith enabled them to die painful deaths, still clinging to God. God may deliver in the short term, or he may not. David found it hard enough to keep faith in the face of the concrete earthly promise he had from God. We still find it sometimes hard to keep faith in the face of the eternal, otherworldly promises that we have received from God ourselves. And we want to be people of faith. But the spear of Saul frightens us, and we feel the tension. And like David, we shed real tears over the matter. and caught in the vice of the contradiction between fear and faith, grief and faith, doubt and faith, often weeping when he knew he should have been praising, David prayed that God would take into account his wanderings, even when they led him out of Israel for a time and into Philistia, and he prayed that God would put his tears in a bottle. What an odd request. Bottle my tears. Some scholars who hold the line that lacrimatories did indeed originally contain the tears of mourners think that David makes reference to those little bottles placed in tombs. Certainly lacrimatories were known at the time. Maybe. Maybe David pictured them. Whether or not, he certainly means this: God remembers our sorrows, fears, and frailties. David clung to faith. Sometimes it seemed only by his fingernails and with tears streaming down his face. But he clung to faith. And some may say that David's faith should have been stronger, like the faith that burned in him in the days of his youth. Maybe he should have approached Saul just like he approached the bear, the lion, and the giant back then, in boldness and unconquerable confidence in the promise and the power of God. Maybe, and maybe David's life could have been different, easier, better, if he had walked right up to Saul and said, "Step aside! God has rejected you and told me to occupy the throne." Most days, I imagine God would have backed that play had David made it. But whether he should have or whether he shouldn't have, the fact is that David did struggle with completely human fears. And God understood. And sometimes David ran away, and God followed him. And caught in the conflict between faith and fear, David wept for his circumstances and his weaknesses, and he prayed that God would remember his tears, and that despite the measure that his tears might fill up, and maybe David needed a wide-mouthed quart ball jar for a lacrimatory, despite the measure of his tears and their causes, that God would remember that he clung to faith in the end. The world is filled with tears, and plenty enough tears are going to be shed by the people of God today. We weep in the midst of the old struggle between fear and faith, and even when the spear is not directed against us, we lose loved ones, we experience difficulties, and we are caught in the struggle between fear and faith, grief and faith, and our tears flow. And maybe we should be crying less and praising more. And maybe we only cling to faith by the very edge of our fingernails. But I believe that God will remember the number of our tears, along with the number of hairs on our heads, as one more thing that he knows about us. And if we cling to faith with weeping and only just, God will remember our tears, and he will honor them right before he wipes them away for the very last time. Let's bow our heads for just one moment.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.